Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Shireen Stanford. Penn State graduate and retired U.S. Army Major Sean Morelli took up cycling after an explosion during her service in Afghanistan caused brain trauma, blindness in her left eye, and severe damage to her spine and neck. Since her first competition in 2010, Morelli has broken cycling world records and racked up several wins in the sport, including world championship titles, and in 2016, two gold medals at the Paralympic Games in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. But her journey to these achievements has not been without challenges, and she spends time sharing her story in hopes of encouraging others to set goals and push through obstacles. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You grew up in the Meadville, Sagertown, Pennsylvania area. Can you tell us a little bit about your family and what your life was just like growing up?
Sure. My family is your typical blue-collar family. My dad's a tool and die maker. We lived out in farm country. My graduating class was 75 strong. So I have a very very big sense of community and family because it was a very small town and very family-orientated.
And then what role did sports play throughout your life?
Sports was always an outlet. It always gave me something to do. Was the reason I had to get good grades, because if I didn't have good grades, I couldn't play sports. Channeled my energy is what my parents said into something positive. So I started swimming when I was 4. I started playing soccer when I was 4. Started playing basketball when I was about 8, and continued those things through high school, and then soccer through university.
And so you went to Penn State Barron and played soccer there,
yes.
Right? What was that experience like? Because, you know, the college level is also a pretty high achievement.
It was. I wasn't one of the people they recruited because I came from such a small school. I actually played on the men's soccer team because we didn't have a women's team. And so I just walked into tryouts and said, hey, I'm here. I want to play soccer. And I made the team. So it was kind of like a dream come true to me.
What do you think some lessons are that come from just competing and being an athlete in general?
I think you learn that it's not all about you. It takes the whole team to win, and it takes the whole team to lose. Not one mistake. It's a combination of them. And, you know, we learned how to work together, even with different people, different personalities that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise. Especially the higher levels you play, the more diverse your team is, and the more you have to just understand that diversity is okay.
And how soon after graduating from Penn State in 1998 did you join the Army?
Immediately. I was in the reserves while I was at Penn State, and when I graduated, it probably wasn't even 2 weeks later that I got a letter in the mail that said, hey, we're taking you out of the reserves and placing you on active duty because we're short officers. So it was almost immediately.
And what made you decide that you wanted to be in the Army?
It was everybody from every generation, as far back as I can remember, in my family has been in the military. My dad, my uncles, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. So it was just kind of a natural thing. Nobody ever said I had to be. But it was just always in my life. So it was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to serve my country like they had, because I could see the values and what it did in their lives. And I wanted to make sure that I had that.
And what are some of those values that you felt like you saw?
Just integrity, honesty, the value that we place on our family and our God, and the different ways that we seem to look at things. That kind of goes back to the whole diversity is okay. In the military, it's a very diverse organization. And learning to work with that and within that and not see it as something that detracts from the job just makes you more successful.
And you were deployed as an engineer officer in Afghanistan?
Correct.
What does an engineer officer do in the Army? What you know, what was your role?
Well, we do lots of things. My primary role, what I was trained to do for the Army, was build roads, construction, buildings, dig wells, quarry operations. But when your engineer unit goes to war, you then become a combat engineer, and you train to do everything. So we cleared routes, which means we went out and we looked for IEDs or any other kind of explosive device or obstacle that may be on the road that would prevent troop movement. We clear minefields. We lay minefields. We build obstacles to protect our units. So we do really a gamut of operations. I was in Afghanistan one day. I could be putting in solar panels in a village to bring them power. And the next day, I could be clearing minefields. So there was really nothing that we didn't do, I guess.
And you were sent to Afghanistan in 2007, but that wasn't your first time in a war zone? Had you been deployed before?
I've had two previous combat deployments. My first one was to Iraq, and then my second was to Afghanistan.
And for you, when you talk about serving, how would you describe your time in the Army? I mean, was it something that fulfilled what you hoped that it would?
I loved my time in the Army. The camaraderie, the closeness of the units, just the teamwork, the friends you make, they're lifelong friends. It's just it gives you this sense of purpose and drive. It makes you, I think it develops who you are, who you're ultimately going to become, because it takes a certain type of person to be willing to serve their country. We don't do it for the paycheck. It's takes something from inside you that makes you want to do it. You know, when we sign that line, we're signing that our willingness to give everything we have to give if needed. And that takes a certain type of person.
And you mentioned some of your duties as an engineer, as clearing, you know, the path. Afghanistan 2007 is when you were injured. As much as you're comfortable talking about or know, can you talk about what happened that caused and what injuries it led to?
Well, obviously we hit something that we would have rather have found instead of hit.
And it was a?
It was a, we believe it was an IED. I don't remember that day. I can read reports and know, but I've chosen not to. And what came out of that day was life-changing. Obviously, I, you know, started as a fully active, ready-to-go soldier and woke up in a hospital and had to learn how to do everything again. Walk, talk, eat, button clothes, live on my own. Everything that people take for granted, I had to learn how to do again. So it was very life-changing.
And you described, you know, after that as being a really difficult time. Now you're kind of listing some of the things you had to relearn to do, but what was that process like? I mean, I've heard you say that you woke up and you didn't know who you were or where you were. Mm-hmm. So what was that process like even to
do those
things?
It was scary, and it was hard. I had to trust these people that I didn't really remember. And I had to, I don't know if you want to say learn that they were there to help me. It was a very trying, very stressful, full of anxiety. I was depressed. Were these people really my parents? You know? Because I couldn't remember them until they started showing me pictures of the family, and then things came back in that aspect rather quickly, but I still couldn't develop a timeline of when things happened with our family. So, but I did remember them finally, and but the recovery process is extremely hard and long. You just have to trust that it's the process, that you can do it.
as you were relearning to do things, talk about what were the injuries actually that you sustained? Because that, I would think, would lead to the things that you had to, you know, relearn to do.
I suffered nerve damage. My C4 and 5 slammed into my column and did some damage to my spinal column.
What's a C4 and 5?
It's the vertebrae in your neck. So, and I elected not to have surgery on it. I didn't want anybody cutting into my neck. Just didn't seem like a good idea. So we waited for that to heal naturally, which took longer, and to see how much damage, you know, after the swelling and the vertebrae were off the spinal column, then that's when the recovery started. And I ended up having a significantly less amount of function in the right side of my body. The nerves don't fire correctly because that area is so damaged that it just sends the signals to the wrong places. My optic nerve in my left eye stopped talking to my brain, so I've suffered visual impairment. I have anxiety, PTSD, traumatic brain injury. I suffer from spasms, tremors, seizures. So there's just a lot of things in the process that I had to learn to live with and had to heal from.
And what would you say, because one of your messages, which we'll get to, is about, you know, limitations that might be put on you, but how you react to them. But what would you say was your lowest point after?
My lowest point was also what I call my greatest failure. And that was not too long after the Army said they were going to medical retire me instead of return me to duty. I had quite the setback after that. And then my husband deployed. And so I was alone and my depression spiraled out of control. And I attempted to just make everything go away. And was very nearly successful at that. And I spent another 2 months in the hospital after that trying to figure out what I was going to do next.
What was it that your father said to you that kind of helped you after that moment?
My father, and I won't ever admit to him that he's a very smart guy. You know, he understood what I was going through. He's a Vietnam veteran. He suffers from PTSD himself. We grew up with him having PTSD outbursts. And so he knew what was going on in my head, probably better than anybody else, better than the doctors who had never been to combat could know. And he just simply, you know, asked me what I was doing. He said, "Kid, what are you doing? Why are you doing this?" And he told me that I was given a gift of a second chance, and I needed to take that gift and not waste it. And when I felt like wasting it, I needed to think of him, I needed to think of my mom, and I needed to think of all my friends and soldiers who never got to come home, who didn't get that second chance, who don't get to sit and talk to their dads anymore. So I took that, and I took it to heart, and I decided that I was going to make the best of everything I did from that point on, and do my best, and be better every day than I was the day before.
So you call it your greatest failure, but in many ways, we're all very grateful that you were not successful in taking your life, because that was a low point. But talk about after that point. So your mind shifted. What did you do physically and emotionally to get yourself back?
You know, I got back into physical therapy because prior to that, once the Army said that I wasn't going to return to active duty, I kind of stopped all my physical and occupational therapies, my emotional and my mental therapies. I stopped working on healing the brain and healing my body and healing my mind. And because it was no longer important, I wasn't going to be able to go back to work. And then after that, you know, after I had a talk with my dad and everything, I decided that I was gonna change that. And I went back to physical therapy and I went back to occupational therapy, started working on all the other things and strength training and all the little things that I needed to do to be able to heal and function on my own in society. And I just kept at it and decided that I was not going to give up on it or the process, that it was going to be long, it was going to be hard, but I was going to continue with it.
And the saying of, you know, it's just like riding a bike. Well, you had to relearn to ride a bike. And there's research about, you know, the positive effects that cycling can have even on PTSD and those kinds of things. Had you found that to be true? And how did you get into cycling?
I do find it to be true. I had a therapist suggest that I ride a bike because I was still battling depression, and I couldn't do the activities that I used to do, such as running and playing soccer. So they suggested that I try riding a bike because they had been reading up on programs such as CAF and Ride to Recovery, Project Hero, that take cycling and teach service members who are injured, wounded, and sick how to cycle in order to help them heal physically and mentally. So they wanted me to ride a recumbent. I refused to ride a recumbent bike. So my husband and I went and got a normal upright bicycle, and I learned to ride that. And, you know, it was very liberating the first time I rode it and did not crash. It took me almost 2 years to figure out how to do it with all my injuries, how to balance with the vertigo and all these things. But I managed to learn, figure it out. My brain figured it out, and now I race.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note from WPSU. I'm Shireen Stanford. My guest is Penn State graduate, Army veteran, and two-time Paralympic cycling gold medalist Sean Morelli. So you learned to ride a bike and as rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And then what made you decide to take it from therapy and something that's more enjoyable to actually a sport, to something that you're going to compete in?
You know, that was, I don't know what actually made me decide to do that. The guys that were helping me learn to ride the bike they all raced, and they kept saying, oh, you should try racing. And I kept saying, oh, no, I'm just going to crash and hurt myself. And they're like, well, you crash and hurt yourself anyway, so why not just try racing? And so I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And I did okay in my first few races. And then Warrior Games came across the TV, and I was like, oh, I should ask the Army how I get involved in that.
And Warrior Games, we should say, is a multi-sport event for wounded, injured, or ill service members.
Correct. And so I signed up for that, and the Army accepted my application. And I was on their cycling team for the Warrior Games, and I won my events. And while we were at the Warrior Games, U.S. Paracycling was there, and they were like, hey, you need to come to our camp. So they invited me to the camp, and I went, and I did well. And was like, well, that was fun. And I walked away. And it wasn't until about 2 years later that they saw me again when I decided I would go to nationals. Now, I had been racing abled body here and there with my friends, but nothing serious. And so when I went to nationals, paranationals for the first time, I beat the gal that they were going to take to the London Games. And they were like, where have you been? I was like, well, Pennsylvania, where you been? And we just kind of rolled away from there, literally. You know, it took off. I went home and I decided, you know, I needed to get serious before I went back. So I got a coach and a nutritionist and a very specific strength program that would help with my balance and all those things that I needed to work for on the bike. And then I went back and they took me to a couple international races, and I won them. And they're like, okay, we need you to stick around. And I was like, well, all right. I'm not really doing anything right now, so I'll ride a bike for you. And it turned out I was pretty good at riding a bike.
Did you know you were really good at that point?
No. Like, I just think the other people weren't training hard. But I had no real concept of that I was good. And you'll probably find it funny, but I still have an issue with confidence and not thinking I'm good. So, and my coach hates that way of thinking, but we're working on it.
We're all works in progress, right?
Correct.
So describe, I have no idea, how does one train to cycle? Describe a training regimen for us.
Well, I have a strength program And then I have the cycling program, and they work together. So I lift weights on a very specific program that develops the core muscles, the strength, and the balance I need to be effective on the bike. And then I have my bike program that runs kind of in cycles. So you'll have some really hard weeks, and those weeks will get gradually harder and harder for about 3 weeks. And then you have a week of recovery, and then you start that cycle all over. And those cycles are intended to train you for whatever specific event you're leading into. So it's very methodical and planned out. And I'm glad I'm not the cycling coach.
And so you do road and track cycling.
Yes.
Is it the same training for both?
No, it's very different. The lift programs are very different. The intensity level of the training are very different. But the overall, the basic concept of it is about the same.
Can you describe for us the feeling of going to the Paralympic Games, going to Rio de Janeiro? What was that like for you?
I took a lot of pictures. You know, it was exciting. I was really excited to be able to represent my country. The only thing I could think of was making sure my flag was the one raised on top, because I really wanted to hear my anthem. And I was just, I knew if I followed the plan and what my coaches had laid out, that I would be successful. I didn't know I would win the gold, but I knew I should medal. I don't want to say I got lucky and won the gold, but I was the best bike that day. And I'm thankful because my mom was there to see it, and she had never really seen me race at that level before. And she'd never been on an airplane before, so it was quite the adventure for her. And it's just, you know, it's an experience that you can't, it's hard to put into words because you are filled with so many emotions and so much pride when you walk out there wearing your nation's colors, and then even more when it's your flag that's being raised to the top and your anthem. It's just feelings that you can't even describe.
And do you think you have to have a certain sort of personality type to compete at this level?
I think so. I think you have to be a very competitive person. You have to be mentally strong. You have to be willing to do and give up a lot of family time, and or a lot of time with your friends. That you know, you have to make a decision. Do you go to Christmas dinner or do you train? And you know, a lot of people go to Christmas dinner, and I train. So there's things that you give up, and you hope that your family understands. And mine, I'm lucky mine does. So it's, I don't know.
So I would think that after the high of something like these national championships that you win, I mean, gold medals, that there's maybe a low after it, or, you know, it's such a big stage, and then you come back to train. How do you deal with that kind of up and
down?
You
take a little bit of time off at the beginning. Our cycles for the games are made into quads, so it's 4 years in between games. So the first year back, you kind of try to just take it easy and not be too serious. And if you're a cyclist, you gain a little weight, you know, and just kind of enjoy life a little bit. And then the third year from the games, you start, okay, well, I have to start getting a little more serious. And then now I'm 2 years out from Tokyo, so now this is when everything is all geared towards Tokyo. There's no more fun and playing.
You gave a talk recently about not limiting yourself. Can you talk about what your message is and why you think that's important?
Well, I think people, they listen to what other people say. They, you know, if someone tells you can't do something or you shouldn't do something or you'll never accomplish something, those are all limitations other people are placing on you. They're not ones you're born with. And we develop those limitations in our mind, and then we think we actually can't do those things. But I believe that it's up to the person to decide that to challenge themselves and challenge what other people are telling them, and to not give up on their dream just because someone said they couldn't do it or they wouldn't achieve it. I'm the type of person that as soon as you tell me I won't be able to do something, my only goal now is to prove you wrong. And you just have to understand and take your limitations and look at the positive. Like, I'm visually impaired. I have muscle spasms and tremors. I have trouble walking. I can't feel my hands and feet. Should I be riding a bike? My mom will say no. But I say yes, because everybody said that's something that I couldn't do and wouldn't be successful at. And I proved them wrong just by getting on the bike. But I've decided to challenge those limitations that they placed on me. They're not ones I placed on me. There's not one thing out there that I have placed on myself as a limitation. And the only person that can stop me from achieving my goals and my dreams and continuing my journey is me. Nobody else can do that. So you have to decide. People have to decide to make that decision.
So you also work with young people. Now you're a soccer coach. Mm-hmm. Why was that important for you to do?
Well, I played soccer, and you know, and I love the sport. I love what it teaches. And, you know, I just wanted to, basically, the same reason I do anything is I want to share my love for something with someone else. I want to inspire them, you know, and show them that they can do it. You know, I graduated from a class of, like I said, 75, and went on to play soccer at very high levels, even in Germany. And so I know that they can do it if they want.
So if there's someone who's listening who maybe is in a similar situation to you, facing some sort of, you know, life-changing challenge, what would be your words to them?
Just don't give up on the process. Continue healing, whether it's mentally, emotionally, physically. Understand it's going to take time and it's going to be hard. And you're going to have ups and downs and setbacks and challenges. But just trust the process and continue the journey.
Well, we look forward to seeing you in Tokyo 2020.
I look forward to being there.
Sean, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Army veteran and Penn State graduate Sean Morelli battled back from injuries caused by a bomb blast during her service in Afghanistan to become a world record holder and Paralympic gold medalist in cycling. She uses her experiences to inspire others to set goals and persevere through challenges. Hear more Take Note interviews on our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Shireen Stanford.